Two terrific Washington Post reporters, Carol Lenig and Philip Rucker, have examined the evolution of Trump's presidency and leadership style and takes readers behind the scenes to reveal never-before-reported details of Trump's shocking behavior and new evidence of chaos in his administration. Their new book is A Very Stable Genius, in rich dialogue among key players and based on hundreds of hours of interviews with more than 200 administration officials, Trump confidants, and firsthand witnesses. That makes up the book. In a news cycle where each Trump-related crisis is quickly overshadowed by the next, they step back to retrace the 45 presidents' time in office and uncover critically important patterns behind the administration's daily dysfunction. Carol Lenig is a national investigative reporter for The Washington Post, where she has worked since 2000 and covers Donald Trump's presidency and other subjects. She won a 2015 Pulitzer Prize for her reporting on security failures and misconduct inside the Secret Service. Again, the name of the new book is A Very Stable Genius, and it's a pleasure to welcome Carol Lenig to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joe.
Very nice to have you on the program. Oh, boy, the book is fascinating. At what point did you and your partner think, we have to tackle this?
You know, it was we were living in just really uncharted territory. Both of us have covered previous presidencies and White Houses, and this one put them all to shame in one respect, which was the pace of the news. It was just dizzying. And it was flying past us so quickly that we would be working on a story all day very hurriedly to put it together and understand what had happened in that moment of scandal or drama or shocking announcement. And we would have forgotten the shocking, dramatic thing that happened the day before or earlier in the week. And we knew that that kind of pace was meant for sure we were missing something. We decided we had to hit the pause button and look back, not only to try to understand kind of what did we miss in the first go round, but also to try to make sense of this presidency, this history that was really, as I say, unfolding right before our eyes. We couldn't kind of wait and figure it out 10 years from now.
So can you make sense out of it? I mean, the book is a sort of a valiant effort, but I'm just wondering, is it possible to make sense of it?
Well, you know, one of the things that Phil and I found, and we feel like we're pretty good reporters, we were
great
learning
reporters.
A lot in real time.
Yeah.
Right. We feel like we felt like in real time we were learning quite a bit, scraping a lot of detail and learning things. But when we went back for the purposes of the book, we realized there were whole episodes that we hadn't really understood everything that happened in that room. Maybe it's the tank meeting where the president dresses down his flag officers. We thought we knew what happened. It actually was much worse than we realized. We thought we understood what children in cages was all about and what happened there. It was actually much worse and much more complicated and nuanced, much more chaotic. But to your question about making sense of it, there are themes in this presidency. One is, you know, this president's North Star is burnishing his image, his self-view, and every president has got to have a certain amount of vanity to run for president. Every president has got to be interested in maintaining their power. But his North Star is actually just winning every day, you know, making sure that he looks good in the eye of his base, making sure that he's clobbered any enemies that he sees coming over the bunkers or over the hill. And that motivates so much of what he does each day. There's a episode I can tell you about that involves, you know, aides trying to advise him not to say something that is misleading and that emails will prove that he's not telling the truth and that his son isn't telling the truth. It's about that whole meeting at Trump Tower where Donald Trump Jr., his son, meets with a Russian lawyer to get dirt on Hillary Clinton. And the president steps into this as a candidate to try to stop them, I'm sorry, as a president to try to stop them from being honest about what really happened, aides warn him, don't do this, it's going to come back to bite you. And to him, it was an eternity. The emails would come out weeks and months from now that would show that he wasn't telling the truth. He wanted to win that day and make sure that he looked good that day. That's one of the key themes and takeaways of our book.
One of the things you said a moment ago struck me, which is that, you know, you think you know what happened, and you, as you dig into it, you realize that it was worse than you thought. I mean, one of the things about this presidency that is so amazing is that when you watch it, you kind of think or you sort of intuit that it probably is even worse than you thought, which is bad enough. Mm-hmm. But also that it doesn't ultimately matter, which is scary. The thing about, you know, I grew up in the 80s, so Reagan was always known as the Teflon president. But there's nothing, and I'm not saying the book has so much that's new and so much that's interesting. I don't mean this as a negative, but there's really little that we didn't know about his behavior prior to his running for president, and yet he still won the election. Does that make sense?
You know, I totally understand, Joe. And actually, I think that's also really revealed in a kind of cinematic fashion in the book. The title, Very Stable Genius, is the president's own description of himself. Not
right.
Once, not twice, but five times. And there are a ton of people who worked for him and at his shoulder for months and years who tell us they don't think he's very stable and they don't think he's very much of a genius. But let's give him credit where credit is due. He is a genius at mastering his megaphone, at using his Twitter handle to connect, and actually just his television appearances to connect in an electric way with his supporters and ralliers and advocates. And that support in a group of voters in America has made him somewhat invincible. It's the reason Republicans in the Senate kind of looked the other way about a lot of presidential misconduct that was found in the House impeachment investigation. I mean, let's be clear, the president enlisted the help of a foreign power to help him win an advantage in a U.S. political election. And the evidence of that was pretty striking and gathered rather quickly. But senators and House members who are Republicans are looking at their districts. And what do they see? A lot of supporters who will be with them or against them, depending on whether or not they support Donald Trump. That's the kind of power that at least it appears Donald Trump has. We'll see in November, but that certainly seems to be the forces he's able to call upon.
When I first heard the phrase "very stable genius," when he used it, all I could think of was the Wile E. Coyote cartoon with Bugs Bunny, where he presents himself as Wile E. Coyote super genius. It doesn't tell us a lot about a human being who feels that way about themselves, that has to tell the world that they're a very stable genius?
Well, yes, we've had quite a few people tell us that if you are a genius, you usually don't have to tell others. But, you know, the president also once described, you know, why he was making a decision by saying, in my great and unmatched wisdom.
Yeah.
I mean, his self-descriptions are pretty grandiose. And I'm not a psychologist, neither is my co-author, Phil Rucker. We stay the heck away from that territory. But I think we all can listen and watch and see that the president makes no bones about his impression of himself, which is very lofty and very high.
You know, I actually had that down as one of my questions to ask you, which, because in reading the book, I noticed, I mean, obviously you don't get into the psychology, but it's really hard not to, isn't it? I mean, in the sense of you do wonder what's going on there.
Many people have asked us about this, and actually, you know, like I said, we're not psychologists, so we stay away from that territory. However, I can tell you what many people who worked with him day in and day out told us, which is that they are concerned, not as a monolithic group of our sources. I don't want to misrepresent that. But there is a group of people who work for him who are concerned about his inability to take in information, his inability to listen to others, almost to view others who brief him as insulting his intelligence just by saying, hey, this is what you need to know about Israel and Palestine. Every president needs the firmament of career experts to lean on, his National Security Council, his Joint Chiefs. Everybody needs that, even in the coronavirus environment. You need these experts to help advise you. But personally and almost psychologically, the president seems to resist taking that information as if it's a threat to the way he sees himself. He describes himself as a, you know, game day player, as he said to former Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, who was quite an expert on Vladimir Putin and had had a lot of interrelationships and negotiations with him when he had been CEO of Exxon. Tillerson tried to tell the president, look, this is how Putin operates. Let me tell you a few things about him. And the president said, look, I met him for a few minutes the other day in this international summit. I know more about this than you do now. I've got this. So that's just a worrisome thing in those aides' minds, because it seems like psychologically the president's shutting off expertise.
A real theme of the book, and I want to get to it because it's the subtitle of the book too, but Donald J. Trump's testing of America. How, describe a little bit about that testing.
There are so many ways in which President Trump has tested what we view, and when I say we, I mean not just the media, but sort of Washington, longtime hands of the federal government and our Constitution, people who studied that, we have viewed as norms. And those norms include separation of powers, a belief that there are political appointees throughout an executive that help make the president's agenda, and there are career public servants who help deliver that and give advice and counsel and help implement the agenda to the degree it's wise, sound, and legal. President Trump has tested that. He's also testing in a more dramatic way in recent weeks, but certainly in the course of the time of our book, the idea of blind justice, a Department of Justice that's independent, objective, governed by the rule of law. He's also tested the norm that we have of America being a city on the hill, a place that is not necessarily the globe's police officer, but one that tries to set the highest moral standard, the highest ground, because we have the luxury to do so. You know, we've been a leader in human rights, and except for a horrible episode after 9/11, a leader in fighting torture and in fighting corruption worldwide. This president turned to his Secretary of State, who was quite flummoxed by all of this, and suggested the U.S. get rid of the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. He said it really wasn't fair to try to criminalize and punish U.S. businessmen who tried to bribe foreign officials to get business. He said other countries do it. U.S. businesses should be allowed to do it, too. That really tests a key sort of norm that we have about America.
I understand your use of the word testing and how you look at it, of how he is testing these various practices, norms, and institutions. How conscious do you think some of this testing is? Because it often seems that there's little thought behind it.
Oh, Joe, I love this question, because I don't have an absolute answer, to be honest. But I also think it's a really good thing to think about. Again, no one can be inside Donald Trump's mind, but the people around him view him essentially as operating the U.S. government the way he operated out of, you know, his lofty 26th, 25th floor of Trump Tower, and operating Trump Org, a business, real estate, and development, behemoth. But ultimately, it was a small family business. It was run by him. He had a few people he trusted, his children included, and he made decisions on his gut and on his instinct and on looking somebody in the eye and thinking he'd made a good deal. That isn't exactly the way the federal government works. And so it's completely plausible to me and to Phil that some of these things he is insisting on are really based on his own operating procedure, and not necessarily because he has some fundamental difference with the separation of powers. He's just like, this is the right way to do it. My gut tells me who gives a dang whether the Department of Justice is supposed to be independent and blind. It's also supposed to be my lawyer and my advocate, and I don't understand why, as we report in the book, he chillingly says in January of 2018, while yelling into the phone at his chief of staff, I want this memo released that's classified. It's going to help Donald Trump. This is a Trump Justice Department. Why aren't they doing what helps Donald Trump? That is not the norm in our country, and yet it could just be his instinct about what's best for him.
The book is fascinating. It is so well written and really helps you kind of make sense of all of this. A Very Stable Genius, Donald J. Trump's Testing of America. It is by Phil Rucker and Carol Wenig. Carol, thank you so much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on our program.
Oh, the pleasure was mine, Joe. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book, A Very Stable Genius. The book is published by Penguin Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.